All right, welcome to the Retro Game Club podcast. This is season 4, episode 1, which is also another episode number. What is that? 112. And I am Rob, and joining me is someone else who just realized that Doom takes place in the year 2022. Hugh.
Yeah, and also the Soylent Green movie takes place in 2022.
Oh, wow. I see a mashup there for sure.
Yeah, weird that they were picking, I guess because there's a lot of twos in there. I know at some point this year we have Tuesday, which is Tuesday, February 22nd, 2022.
Not bad.
Where you celebrate by doing, I don't know what.
Probably playing Sonic 2 or something.
Yeah, I'll play some 2-themed game.
It'll be Sonic Tuesday, I guess. But yeah, we haven't talked in quite a bit. We tried to record a few times, and I got sick, and you were busy, and I guess there were some holidays in there and stuff like that.
Yeah, holidays, all that stuff. And then sort of a general feeling of not wanting to do anything because it's miserable.
It's 3 degrees outside right now.
Yeah.
Which in Celsius, that's minus a lot of numbers.
It's minus a few, yeah. Yeah. I can't figure Celsius out.
No. But what have you been up to since mid-December?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I mentioned in the last episode we did of 2021 that I think I was going to try and talk about some 1982 games, like maybe do a summer of 82 games. And it led me to reading like a bunch of 1982 computer magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing. Like the letters to the editor in these magazines are just so nitpicky. You know, they make some little tiny statement about a piece of hardware, and it leads to someone basically sending a dissertation about very low level hardware things.
So nothing's changed.
Nothing has changed. No, nothing at all. What did I write here? I'm going to skip my notes here around. Over the break, I read this great article by Raymond Chen. He's an engineer for Microsoft Windows. He's been like a Windows developer for a long time.
Yeah, we've talked about him before, I think.
I have, yeah. I'm a big fan of his blog. And he wrote about the Tandy VIS, Video Information System, which I'll link to the article. What I got away from the article is, one, like, the VIS had really terrible hardware. They made really bad hardware choices. But two, this is almost certainly the first game system to run Windows.
Really?
Yeah, it ran a custom version of Windows called Windows 3.0 with multimedia extensions.
What do you think the multimedia extensions are? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, it's fine. One of the things it includes is the ability to output to TV at 320 by 240 resolution.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. But essentially, he said the thing that, I mean, other than the system being a system made by Tandy, it had a 1X CD drive and no disk cache.
Wow.
So that meant it was even slower than like Sega CD.
Yeah, that's rough. Wow.
So it's a cool little read. In terms of like playing games, because I've been playing with the PlayStation Classic and AutoBleem a lot. And I loaded a bunch of samplers on there because I think I actually like samplers better than full games.
Uh-huh.
And went through that. But, you know, the thing that I thought was actually the biggest video game news of like the past month is probably John Madden dying. If you look back at like the history of Madden Football, and there's some podcasts that have, you know, interviewed the developers of Madden Football. Like the whole reason we have sports games that are realistic sims today really comes from Madden Football, because, you know, these guys like legitimately spent hours and hours with John Madden trying to learn football playbooks. Like a lot of the algorithms haven't changed. There was a lawsuit with one of the original programmers basically arguing that like the algorithms he wrote for Apple II are still in the code today and that his contract, he was supposed to get royalties for as long as they were used. And the other thing was like, they talk a lot about how John Madden wouldn't put his name on the game until they got 11-on-11 football, which was really, really hard to do on hardware. Like they actually had to wait for the hardware to get better before they could finish the game.
Yeah, and like 64K of RAM, that's not easy.
Yeah.
Whatever the Apple II had, yeah.
Yeah, but he just said he's not, absolutely not approving of the game unless it's an actual real football game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back, I think that is, it may not be the first. It's definitely the first like mainstream, big, you know, successful sports game that was super realistic. You know, that used like real playbooks, had normal size rosters, you know, that actually was trying to simulate the game, which was a big change because prior to that, sports games were usually more like arcade style games.
Didn't they have to like sit on long train rides and take notes or something with him?
Yeah. Yeah. Because John Madden developed claustrophobia as an adult and refused to fly. So because he was John Madden, he would get a private Amtrak car to go between the different cities.
That's not awesome.
And I want to say private car. I don't mean like he had a sleeper car. I mean, he had a Amtrak car.
Yeah, that's bigger than like a trailer park home.
Right. Because clearly, if you have claustrophobia, the sleeper car is not going to be any better.
Yeah.
And yeah, the devs, so he had all this downtime. So the devs would ride on the train with him just between two random cities to learn about football.
Wow. You know, it was just, you know, anyone that listens to this podcast knows I'm not a sporty guy, but I do love some sports games. Mm-hmm. And it was really John Madden Football 94 specifically that sold me on the Genesis. You know, I had a TurboGrafx-16 CD and an NES and a computer. So I felt like I had no reason for the Genesis, and I saw Sonic and all that stuff. And, but it was really playing Madden where I was like, okay, I get this. This is a fast system. This is an amazing game. They finally got football right, and it really sold me on it. So
yeah.
I definitely have fond memories of Madden. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's, of course, you know, huge. It was a huge system seller. I mean, I sold many Genesis systems in the 90s just so, you know, to people who wanted to play Madden. And there's people who buy the latest Xbox and latest PlayStation really just to play Madden and a couple other mainstream games. Like, people listening to this show, maybe, I hope everyone listening appreciates Madden Football, but maybe they don't play it a ton. Like, if you go to a gaming convention, a retro game convention, there's usually not, there'll be stations with competitive games set up, but I don't think I've ever seen Madden Football set up somewhere.
Which would be a great one. I mean, that's a perfect competitive game.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, it skews towards the kind of short, more arcadey games.
And I really think that the people you specifically brought up, the people who would just buy consoles for Madden games or, you know, specific sports mm-hmm. titles, I think that is a perfect demographic for like the Stadia or, you know, PlayStation Now, you know, their streaming service, any streaming game service, because now you don't have to buy a system. You could just buy the one or two games that you would actually want for that system. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I see that being the forerunner of that economy, I guess.
Yeah, I kind of don't, because they still kind of come across as things for nerds rather than like the people who are buying Xbox to play Madden Football probably wouldn't call themselves like a gamer or a nerd.
Exactly. That's my point.
Oh, but see, I'm making the opposite point that the PlayStation, it seems like to me, the Google Stadia seems like a niche nerd device, whereas the PlayStation 5 seems like a mainstream game device.
I think that's a marketing error. Mm-hmm. I definitely see where you would get that and where anyone would get that, yeah. But that's marketing's fault.
Yeah. They still do the Stadia. That's still a thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's even, they even have the apps for TVs now, so you don't have to buy a Google USB stick or use your browser or anything. You just download the app directly to your TV and use any controller. I'm not saying people do that. I'm just saying if one would like to. Yeah.
I will not be doing that. What have you been up to?
Oh, man. Let's see. I put together a Dreamcast. So it has an aftermarket case, which I sent you a photo of, but so everyone else knows, it's a like a crystal see-through case. It has a recapped Dreamcast's original motherboard with a new power supply that won't die or overheat. Runs a lot cooler. And it has the mode, the Terra Onion mode, with a SSD drive on it. And it also has, with the mode, you have the option to use, it can support a USB stick. I'm not going to talk about this too long because it'll probably be a topic. But in fact, you know what? I'm going to cut it off there because it might be a topic one day. Let's just say, yeah, I have an updated Dreamcast. And I've been enjoying it quite a bit. I finally got my Mr. Blister FPGA together, and I've been playing a lot of TurboGrafx with that. That'll definitely be a topic as well. And I got for, I think, $4.99 on eBay. I think it was like $9 after shipping. I got Star Raiders for $2,600 with, and I'm going to hold this up for everyone listening, with the original second controller. And so this is a game I played a lot as a kid, but I never had the second controller. And the second controller kind of has a, let's see, what does it have here? A warp drive button. It turns your computer on and off, shields on and off, and it changes your point of view, and it turns the map on and off. So really forward-thinking, a really great game. It also came out for the 5200, which I've never played, but I've seen video, and it looks like, you know, a little bit better graphics. My mom worked at a KB toy store back in the day. Somehow we always got the new Atari. You know, we had the original, then we had the Darth Vader, then we had the Mini. And we had a lot of games, and we had Star Raiders. We never bought used games. I really don't think that was a thing at the time. But we didn't have this controller. So it was my favorite game, and I could barely play it because I didn't have the controller. I didn't know this controller existed until pretty recently. So I'm just wondering what was going on with my mom. Like, was there some scam she was running or something? So, yeah, I'll have to ask her about that. But it'll definitely be a game club game eventually. What else here? Other than our game club game, I started playing Watch Dogs for PS4. You know this game?
I've heard of it, but I know I don't even know what genre it is.
Okay, it's a shooter. So it's a series, and it is Grand Theft Auto between 3 and 4, I would say, that kind of tech. I actually think it might be... Now, it's Ubisoft, so it you know, it's not Rockstar, but it feels like the Grand Theft Auto game engine. And you play a hacker, and the difference between this and Grand Theft Auto is, like, you're supposed to not kill civilians. I guess you're not supposed to do that in Grand Theft Auto, but I guess they don't make that very clear. But I am very impressed with this game. I want to play them all now. I'm really into it. I'm into the story, the gameplay, everything about it. It's been on my list for a while. And lastly, I want to give a shout out to a Twitch streamer called Hungry Goria. I have been watching her play Bully the past many nights, and she's been making me laugh, and I definitely recommend this channel to anyone. She's very witty, and Bully was a game club game a while ago, and I kind of got down on it. I don't think I gave it a big enough chance, because at first it kind of, I don't want to say it put me in a bad mood, but it kind of gave me a sour taste because of the bullying, you know, like, no one is nice to you in this game. And just kind of the way she played it and got through it, it really made me laugh and enjoy the game, and kind of made me want to jump into it. So shout out to her if you want kind of a family-friendly streamer that'll make you laugh. So that was kind of a lot of stuff, but we haven't had a show in a while. I think some housekeeping. Some people might notice that I switched our bumper music. So the last song is now the first song, and vice versa. And I just wanted to do something different for season 4. And yeah, we'll keep this thing going through the season. I think we have some consolidated fun news items. We're not just going to have any old news item. We're actually going to pick some fun stuff and actually talk about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm sort of leaning towards, like, we are going to try and feature more articles that are about, like, things you can actually try, like, you know, hacks or homebrews or projects that you can actually try, and kind of less about, like,
Game Boys in things.
Yeah. You know, the hypothetical example I used is like, if there was an article that was like, Sega engineer reveals Game Gear almost had third button, but then didn't. Like, we've covered a lot of stories that basically are that. I don't want to do any more of those.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I picked a lot of stories before because no one else talked about them and kind of made our podcast a little bit different. But I think our podcast will still be different from everyone else's from the stories we choose. So there might be fewer of them, but there'll be more substance.
Yeah.
But a lot of our articles this time are, you know, maybe a few weeks old, but because we haven't recorded in a while, but this is a retro show. So who cares?
Yeah, and some might be before that new rule. Okay.
yeah.
Like this first one. What is this? 8-bit processor built in Minecraft can run its own games. Oh, so this is something you can actually do. You can.
Oh, this is, like you just said, this is an 8-bit processor that actually works in Minecraft that someone built. Uh-huh. It is huge in Minecraft because each block is like a meter, I guess. And you could actually play a Snakes type game in it. It's, I think, like 1 kilohertz, but it's 8-bit. It has 256 bytes of memory. I mean, that's impressive right there. It's 1 hertz. It's not even a kilohertz. Yeah. It's 1 hertz.
And I guess you have to install it if you run your own Minecraft server. It's on there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so you have to download it. They have a link to it here, to where you can download this thing for your Minecraft server.
Yeah, that is really cool. Up next, we have a YouTube video inside the Atari 2600 ColecoVision adapter. So this is a Ben Heck video, and he just found his 2600 Coleco adapter, which if you had a ColecoVision, you could buy this and play 2600 games. But the ColecoVision didn't have the same processor or anything as the 2600. So he figures out how it worked.
Yeah, it's a pretty big teardown. You could probably use this to build your own too.
Oh, nice. I didn't think about that.
I think that could be the next. I hope that's his next part. Is you could probably strip down a 2600 to a very small, you know, maybe not as small as this thing, but to something smaller, and then, you know, wire your own ColecoVision adapter.
That's funny. Again, that would be a cool project.
Yeah. Well, you know, the 2600 is a lot like the Beats headphones, right? Like, it's made to feel more expensive than it is.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we kind of get into that in the... we have another 2600 story later in the episode that kind of dives into that, too. I should have organized these a little bit better. What else do we have? Real-time shadows on the Nintendo 64. This is just a quick article. Maybe we wouldn't put this in future episodes, but kind of a cool article on how the Nintendo 64 ray traces. That's about it. It was ahead of its time, and they pretty much go into it.
Amiga 500 Mini is coming out in like, well, unless there's a supply chain issue, will be coming out in like 2 months. And it is compatible with the 500, 600, and 1200. It's similar to the Commodore 64 Mini, right? You know, you can run games on it. You could develop your own games on it. I don't think I'm going to get one of these.
No, I don't.
These systems.
I don't think I am either. It has some cool games on it, but I like that it comes with, you know, the joypad and the mouse, and that it has a USB port that's specifically for putting ROMs on. Like, they don't lock it up at all. So I think that's pretty cool. $140. I really didn't have an Amiga as a kid. I know you did, but I really don't have too much nostalgia for it. Let's see. Oh, yeah. There's a port of Sonic on the Commodore 64 now. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, and Sega usually does not take these things down. Mm-hmm. So you should be able to still get this. I would argue this might look better than the Sega Master System version, but I have to go look at that one again. It's close.
Yeah, and they say one of the only differences is there's one stage that doesn't auto-scroll. That's about it. I mean, this guy probably has a job at Sega now, knowing Sega.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's not like you could decompile the Master System version and convert it, because that's also a different CPU.
Yep. Yeah. Very, very impressive. This person's way smarter than me. Other people that are smarter than me are the coders of RetroArch, who recently updated their NetPlay. So the way RetroArch's NetPlay works is it's not streaming. It literally if you want to watch someone play something online or play with them, you have to have the exact same ROM and pretty much the same version of RetroArch, and it just passes button presses between the two systems, which I think is a pretty good way to do it. But they've updated it, so there's a lot less lag and much easier to do, and it also works on Steam now. So very cool. Oh, I'll take this one because it's a weird one. Okay, so here's an article that no one actually, I couldn't find a real article about this. So unfortunately, this is a link to Reddit,
which then just links to a GitHub merge request.
Yes. So this is just MAME got sued by the company that makes a lot of shooters, Dodonpachi, and a few others. And so they're like kind of shmup games that are very, very good. And they got, you know, a takedown notice from a lawyer, which if you're a MAME developer, I mean, you're not going to fight this in court. So they actually abided by this and took out support for these games. The horrible thing about this article is that the guy that owns this company now is an ex-developer for MAME.
Right.
So
what are the chances their software is, like their arcade stuff, is just actually using MAME?
Yeah, true. Yeah, so I wanted to put that in there, so because it wasn't very cool, but it was cool that MAME just, they abided by it with no hassle at all, so good on them.
New Super Mario Brothers 3 Out of Bounds Discovery. So it's some weird glitch where there's a video of it on Twitch, and I guess you can, I didn't post the instructions here. A little annoyed by that. But it's a boundary-breaking bug that lets you swap to Luigi for player 2. Wait, Luigi wasn't already player 2?
No, for player 1, I think.
It says player 2.
Oh. Yeah, you're right. Winnie will swap Luigi for player 2. Yeah, you're right.
Wait, so what does this do?
So if you get to a certain spot, I think it's in, world one, or, you know, the overmap one, and you get to, like, the Mario game, you know, not Super Mario's, but a Mario game you could play. If you do something specific in that, you come back as Luigi.
Okay.
Which is pretty awesome.
All right, so I'm trying to find a video of it here. There's a video here on YouTube. All right, so there's Mario. All right, he's clipping off the map. Don't know how he did that. All right, they're in the two-player game. This is only a 35-second clip. Okay, Luigi dies. We return to the game. Player one is now Luigi.
That is amazing. And so what was the two-player part? Was it, like I said, was it Mario Brothers?
That must be a typo because that tweet that they're referencing was removed.
Yes.
So what this does is you clip out of bounds and land on a board that has the Mario game. And then if Luigi dies, you return as Luigi as player one. It's a totally useless hack.
But so cool.
Right. It's mostly like I'm going to use it to settle a schoolyard bet, you know, my friend's cousin's next door neighbor's best friend said you could play as Luigi in player one.
Yeah. Yeah. That is cool. Oh, some sad news. The founder of Psygnosis passed away a while ago now, a few weeks ago while we were on our break. So, The founder of the company that created Wipeout and a handful of other, and Lemmings, and a handful of other really good games passed away. So, lost to the community. Oh, yeah. Remember talking about this Taito Egret 2 mini system a while ago?
Sort of, yeah. Yeah, I think we talked about it. It feels like a forever ago.
Yeah. Well, it's coming out here now, so... It's not a bad lineup. I mean, it's 50 games, but I think the heavy hitters are the Bubble Bobble games, Kadash, I guess. What else do we have here?
By coincidence, I think Angry Video Game Nerd posted a review of like the Title Legends collections recently.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have all the Title Legends collections. And it's like, you know, back in like the 90s where they stopped selling singles. And if you wanted to buy, like, you'd have to buy, like, an entire album to get, like, one good song.
Yes.
you remember that time?
Yes.
That's what the Taito collections are to me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, like, who's excited for Quix?
Well, okay, first, I find Quix kind of relaxing.
Okay.
But you probably have a version that was built into your cell phone, right?
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, like, Ray Force has a lot of fans, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Twin Cobra, maybe?
Kaiser Knuckle. I mean, it's just a Final Fight clone.
And Space
Bubble
Invaders.
Symphony, if you want, like, worse Bubble Bobble, you know, like.
there's a few good games.
Violence Fight on here? Yeah, Violence Fight's on here, at least. I mean, that's funny to look at the title screen.
And there is a trackpad add-on, which is kind of cool if you're an Arkanoid fan.
Yeah, so that's all right. It's really...
Yeah.
I don't know if I can get to 10 games on here that I like. I mean, I think Bust a Move 2's on here under a different name.
Mm-hmm. Great game. Great game.
Yeah, yeah, I guess... Yeah.
But a lot of people are just fans of this cabinet in general, so that's kind of cool. And let's see the price. It is... That linked right to itself. So, $170.
Nope.
No, thank you.
That is a hard pass.
Yeah, and... One of the craziest stories this week is a long, long, long write-up about how the Atari 2600 was invented. It goes...
Yeah, and this is from like an engineering site.
Yeah, they go deep into this. It's pretty fascinating. How the different chips were chosen and how they were engineered to work together and why and the whole purpose of it and... doing more than the hardware than it should and schematics. And if you're an Atari fan, you should, I want to say try to read this because it's a pretty dense read, but it's really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else do we have here?
And last thing, I think, right? Are we keeping up?
Yes. Oh, the page boy. Did you hear about this one?
No, I did not.
This was a adapter that was supposed to come out for the Game Boy that you could kind of send email and trade, I don't know, photos and stuff like that. I think it had a built-in modem. Yeah, there's a YouTube video on it. It did a lot of stuff, or it would have. But it would have turned your Game Boy into a PDA just like the... The thing you kickstarted. What was that called?
Yeah, yeah, which I'm being all angry about because they sent their update email basically saying, yeah, we don't know if we're going to finish this thing now.
Oh, no.
We all got real jobs, and I don't know if we're going to work on it. It was basically the vibe I got off it. So.
Oh, no. Not cool.
Yeah, this I mentioned I'm deleting my Kickstarter account after this, if this thing ships. And once it, if it ships, I can delete my Kickstarter account afterwards. And if it doesn't ship, I will also delete my Kickstarter account. But I'm not doing this anymore.
We all, you, Zach, and I have all been burned by Kickstarter a few many times.
Yeah. Yeah, this is this will this is turning into this the second semi-recent Kickstarter I've been burned by. I'm just not doing it anymore.
I mean, there could be an entire podcast series about just bad Kickstarters.
There's some YouTube. I watch some YouTubes. There's definitely a YouTube channel that does like failed Kickstarters and then ones that are just blatantly that were just blatantly fraudulent from the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And a lot of them were like, I mean, it's a lot of game stuff, you know, a lot of like, I'm going to build this game. And then you put out this like bare minimum prototype that barely does anything, declare victory and take off with the cash.
Yeah. 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 I think the Retro Hours has covered a few of those as well.
Yeah. I'm done with Kickstarter. And of course the amount of spam I get, like the main reason I wanted to delete my Kickstarter account is so I can add Kickstarter as a spam term. In my email.
Yeah.
So I can just block any emails related to it, but I got to wait for this last thing to ship.
If it ever does. Yeah.
Their last update was a very much a, we are not shipping this thing update. Let me see if I can dig it up here. Hold on. Project update. Hey there, productivity fans. I hope you've all had a restful winter holiday and are feeling blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of big changes that have been happening for the team based on the events of 2021. This is your first warning. These include financial freedom for the project, publishing and distribution deals, clearing away existing commitments, blocking development of the suite, and impacts of COVID. Okay, so that sounds good, right?
Uh-huh.
First off, the creator of the project, I'm going to use his name on the show, just finished their degree in computer science and got a job. All right. And because of getting a job, they now have financial freedom, allegedly, whatever that means. Thirdly, we reached an agreement with the publisher for distribution after the backer rewards are completed. Uh-huh. Okay. So this all sounds pretty good. Fourth. So RT, where is it here? The creator normally lives alone. He's been temporarily displaced from their home. Da, 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 da. So basically they're saying, well, because of COVID lockdown, the solo developer isn't really working on it right now. And development is, I'll quote here, temporarily paused until life settles down a bit.
Oh, no.
Starting a new job, going into lockdown, and moving out of your home is not conducive to the effective software development. Da, 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 da. So in other words, we're not doing this anymore.
Oh, no. Or we'll release it in 2035 or something.
Right. Because the next will be, while he moved due to COVID and got a job and all that stuff, met someone, having a baby, kids going to college now, da, da, da. Like, this thing's never going to get done.
But it'll still get done before the Amico.
Well, yes. Yes. Midi's piece will be accomplished well before yes. The Amico. But I guess I thought because this was on Kickstarter, it was further along than it actually was. It seems to maybe not be very far along. And yep.
Well,
it wasn't expensive. It really wasn't that much money.
It was a cool idea, though.
It was Canadian, so it had a really favorable exchange rate. So it really wasn't that much. But I predict this will not ever come out. You know, it's a typical way. It's like, we're going to load up a bunch of like, hey, here's all these great developments. Oh, and by the way, we're not doing it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Game Club picks.
Yeah. Game Club. I think we have at least one good game in there. So I'll start since mine's up there first. I picked Psychonauts from 2005, which I think is retro enough. I wanted a game I could really sink my teeth into. And this had been on my list for so long, and I was afraid if I didn't pick this during a period where I had a long time to play it, I would just never would. So this is a game by Double Fine, directed by Tim Schafer, who is a very famous developer. He did, you know, Day of the Tentacle, two of the Monkey Island games, Full Throttle, Grim Fandango, and many others that I have not played, but... very well-respected dude, and this was on the PlayStation 2 and Xbox, and you could play it on the computer as well. I think the Steam updates are really updated it. I played what I think is called the remaster version. It was updated a little bit, And you play as Rasputin, or Raz, a kid that goes to the Psychonaut school where you are trying to train to become a Psychonaut. So a Psychonaut is kind of a brain telepathic kind of warrior where you can transport yourself into people's minds and kind of fight stuff in there. And while he's there, there's some disagreements with his father, who you never see. You know, you just hear teachers talk about his father coming to pick him up in a few days, and he needs to impress his father by becoming a full Psychonaut within a few days, which has never happened in the history of Psychonauts. And while he's there, some shenanigans happens, and someone steals all the kids' brains other than his, and he needs to retrieve them by going through these crazy, like, Psychonaut, you're in people's brains kind of situation. And yeah, a lot of daddy issues in this, but it is a third-person platformer, definitely story-driven. I think it's, for the time, I think it's very well designed. The gameplay was great. The story was great. The characters were unique and interesting. I definitely give this, I think everyone should play this game. Hugh, I really think you would enjoy this game. But
yeah, not owning it was a little bit of a barrier.
Yes. Yes. I could see that. So I wanted to get all that out of the way before I go into the negatives, because I do give this a very positive review. It definitely comes out, you know how there's kind of an era of games, I want to say like 1998 until around this era, 2005, maybe 2006 or seven, where most 3D games were very brown, kind of washed out, murky, just that color palette. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This definitely falls into that, and it doesn't do it justice, because this, if they just added a bit more brightness to this, the dark parts would be darker and kind of scarier, and, you know, people's minds are crazy. So, you know, if they use more Katamari type color schemes in some points, I think it would have been a little bit better there. Some of the platforming for me was a bit difficult for no reason, but that was a product of its time. This is definitely like a second generation 3D game where they kind of got the platforming there. And also, you know how most modern games like the last few East games and the Final Fantasy VII remake, to do your special move, you will hold like L2 or R2 or something, then press one of, you know, the triangle, X, you know, circle, whatever. They didn't invent that yet. So using your special powers in this is kind of a nuisance. They kind of make it, I don't know, a bit clumsy. They just hadn't figured that out yet, and that's really not this game's fault. That's really all I'm going to say about this game. I definitely think everyone should play it, and oh yeah, I do have one more note on this. This game, Hugh, I think you'll like this part, actually.
Okay.
This game doesn't give you much direction. You'll talk to someone, and if you happen to daydream for a second, they really don't repeat everything.
Okay.
And so they may have given you a hint or a place to go, and if you missed it, you missed it. And even if you talk to them, they don't sometimes say the entire thing again. And that made me not like parts of this game, which is not fair, because that's why I like Sierra Online games. You know what I mean? So it had kind of that old Sierra feel at points where you were just like, how would I know to do that? I actually had to look up, I think, two or three times on how to do certain things. And at least one of those times I was actually doing the thing, but I wasn't doing it exactly the perfectly right. So I could see some people getting frustrated, but it's one of those games where you have to try and punch and kick and touch everything. So I definitely gave you that retro feel there. So yeah, Psychonauts, definitely play it. And you could get it for really cheap on Steam and the PS Store. So highly recommended.
Yeah, that was my problem. I looked through my giant pile of PlayStation 2 samplers, and I did not find a copy of it. Mm-hmm. I could have looked harder, maybe, but I don't think I have a copy of this. I did try watching a speed run, but yeah, no idea what's going on.
Yeah, they skip through all the dialogue, so you have no clue.
It just looks like some dude running around, you know. It was crazy confusing.
Yeah. Well,
it's probably using like all kinds of glitches and stuff too, so it doesn't even look like a normal gameplay. I should have maybe tried to find like a full playthrough. What do they call that? Long play.
Yeah. Well, on how long to beat, it says it takes 8 hours, and it took me 12 hours. So I was not very good at it, but I think, you know, I'm sure you'll stumble across it one day. And if you do, let me know. I definitely want to hear your review on it.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, let's jump to yours.
So I played Final Doom, which is, it's just a Doom mod. It's just a WAD, right? It's not even a mod. So Final Doom, as far as I can tell, is just a WAD pack for Doom 2. I played the PlayStation version because I just set that up on Autobleem. And I would say, like, technically, they definitely, whatever, they made some improvements to, like, the Doom engine on PlayStation. Because I think it actually looks and plays better than Doom on the PlayStation. Mm-hmm. Doom on the PlayStation, I think, is a very good conversion. Just Final Doom seems to be a little more polished. But really, this is like one of those like arbitrarily difficult WAD files you would download off an FTP site. I ended up putting it on like the easiest setting. And even then, it's like, it's not the enemies that are, like, the enemies are more difficult because there's just so many more, and because they throw like bosses from the first game, like right into the second stage.
Yes.
But it's the level layout. Like these, you know, Doom 1 and 2 had some confusing things, but ultimately you could kind of see them as being like real buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could kind of, yeah, I mean, like especially Doom 2, because Doom 2 is supposed to be placed on Earth. Like a lot of the maps kind of come across like actual places, maybe not tricks and traps, but like other levels come across like semi-realistic places. Mm-hmm. And here, this is like no one would design a building like Final Doom.
Yeah.
it's just every level is just confusing to get through. I called it the Super Mario Brothers 2 Japan of the series, right? Where it's, you've made no improvements to the game, you've just made it harder.
Yeah, it's almost a money grab.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, I think it's definitely a money grab.
So was this even designed by Romero?
But yeah, that would have been a good thing to look at. Why, do you think he was off to other things at that point? He was working on Daikantana?
Maybe, or Quake or something, yeah.
Yeah, or I guess Quake would have been one. Let's see. Let's open up the credits here for...
Designer, John Romero. He did design this.
Artist.
At least according to Wikipedia, yeah.
According to Wikipedia, yeah. Probably, we can check possibly Atari-owned Mobi games here. Mobi games sure isn't advertising the fact they got bought by the company that calls themselves Atari. Let's see your credits for Final Doom. Original concept, John Romero. Programming, again, because it's the same engine. Here's the thing. So then the credits have Team TNT level designers. So the way I'm reading these credits, it's basically saying, you know, John Romero and John Carmack wrote the game, which we already know they did.
Yeah.
But then this other group did the level design.
Okay. Because I always thought Romero did the level design, but maybe...
There maybe is a didn't. List like a mile long of level designers here. This is a... No wonder these stages are so convoluted. Like, this is a lot. Like, okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5... There's got to be 30 level designers.
So they probably just had their interns. Like, this was their... If you want to get hired here, create a level.
Well, yeah, I'm clicking on random credits. One guy, this is his only game credit. Another guy, only game credit. First game credit. Only game credit. first game credit. This is a pattern developing your only game credit. Yeah, I think you're right that these are just, like, most of these, the people that are listed as level designers don't have any other game credits on Mobi games.
Some are interns.
And, and the ones that do have other credits, like, they don't have anything prior to Final Doom. So, yeah, these are people who got hired, said, oh, man, working in the game industry is horrible, and left. This is shock. There is not a single person. Like, I can't find a single person who has game development experience prior to this, and very, very few that have experience after it.
I'm so glad you looked up the, that's funny.
This is bad. I'm wondering if these are just like random people they found online that were designing Doom levels.
Oh, and they just said, let us use that one. We'll send you some bucks.
I wonder if they just licensed a bunch of stuff off some FTP site. I mean, a couple of these people have had very, very long, like one person, Steve McCrea. This looks, again, looks like Final Doom is his first game credit is Final Doom, or possibly a game called Chicky Egg, which appears to be a game that he did solo. So maybe he did one game, you know, solo, but then he's worked on 20 other games since then. I mean, he worked on Metroid Prime 2, for example. So one or two of these 30 people went on to do stuff, but almost none of them have any other credits. Wow.
I will give this game a little bit of credit. I like it better than Doom 64. I can actually see what's going on. It's one of the few. I tend to like Nintendo 64 graphics better than PlayStation, and for this, I like this one better.
I have to play Doom 64 again. It's tough to say. I think I might have bought Doom 64 during the limited run games annual clearance sale.
Well, the thing with Doom 64 is you can't tell if the level design is good because you can't see anything.
But I thought on the new console versions they fixed that.
I don't think so. Not that I saw. I could be wrong though. That would be a nice quality of life thing.
All right. So what are you gonna play next?
I'm gonna do Soul Calibur on my new fun Dreamcast. How about you?
I'm going to put any Madden game. I don't think we will do individual Madden games. I think it's up to you and the listeners and me and anybody else to come up with your own criteria for what is a sufficiently retro Madden game.
I like it.
And play it. Yeah. Because it's not like we're going to do Madden 97 and then like sometime in the future we're going to do like Madden 93. Like, we're just not going to do that.
No, I agree.
Madden by Madden podcast sounds excruciatingly boring. For as much as I think Madden's a well designed game,
that would be a hilarious podcast to just troll people with.
Yeah, I mean, especially as the series progresses, and it's really more like Madden annual roster update.
Yeah. Well, if listeners, if you've played any of these games, if you've played Psychonauts, if you've played Final Doom, if you were one of the coders on Final Doom, which you likely were, because I think everyone did a level on there.
Everyone was, yeah. I'd like to hear how you got on there. Was it summer intern, or was it you posted some stuff on an FTP site and suddenly John Romero was calling you?
Yeah. If you play Soul Calibur, any Madden game, have any cool retro projects doing some cool retro arc stuff, if you like the Amiga 5000 Mini or 500 Mini coming out, anything, please, we would love to hear your feedback. Email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. We have a link tree here where you could see all our stuff that Zach takes care of, like our Facebook and Instagram and all that other stuff. And we do have a few emails this time.
Yeah, I'll get these here. So Jason writes in, talking about Dragonfire. He said he played a lot of it on the 2600 and really liked it. He said he would buy any Magic game that he saw, which is, I think, a good point. Magic games generally were very good. He did really like doing the knee jump and was amazed at how fast your guy moves.
I forgot about the knee jump.
Yeah, I like the knee jump. Final Doom. So he said most of his friends had PCs during the Doom era, but he had a PS1. But he did pick up Final Doom as a way to play Doom, and played through 5 or 6 levels over a couple of weeks before deciding it was too hard. It wasn't until he played regular Doom 1 and 2 that he figured out that Final Doom is a set of relatively difficult WoTs and not a good way to start playing Doom.
True.
And he says, as a present to himself, he bought the Legend of Zelda game and watch. It has Legend of Zelda, Zelda 2, both in NES and Japanese versions. It also has Link's Awakening. I have one. I bought one of these too.
Oh, cool. You like it? Yeah.
I mean, the screen's really small. I gotta get it. It comes with like a cardboard, a junky cardboard stand. I gotta like buy like a real little tiny stand for it because it has a clock. You can just use it like a clock too. It says it plays, it auto plays through a version of Legend of Zelda. When I looked at the clock, I guess I haven't sat and like just seen what it does. It seems to like go through each screen in Legend of Zelda and have Link fight some enemies. I don't know if it's doing a full playthrough or not.
Huh.
So it's pretty cool. It is definitely a very functional clock. So thanks for that one. Thank you for that, Jason. And Majors writes in, let's see, about playing Sonic games in a Tesla, which at least would have better battery life than the Game Gear. What else here? Rob, you wanted to take a break from difficult games and play something easy. Is that true?
That is true. Yeah, I was done. I think it was that kind of Bridge of Spirits game that broke me.
Okay, okay. Oh, so he recommends the Shanghai games.
Oh, yeah. That's not a bad bad idea at all.
That's not a bad one. There's some version. He recommends the PC Engine ones. They're very, very cheap, and it's not like you need to know Japanese to play Shanghai.
Yeah.
But that's on everything. I mean, that's literally a type of game that is on everything. Wonders if I was trolling about putting a Earthbound in the hydraulic press. You could say that, yeah, but I think it would be funny. It's not so much trolling. I think, first of all, I think the hydraulic press channel would get their all-time highest views.
Probably. It would definitely get on some news sites.
It would get on some game news sites. I would probably not be very popular with your Earthbound community, but that would be pretty, still would be funny. I don't know. What Rare game would you like to see sent to the hydraulic press people?
Yeah, that's a good, I think that's a good social media question.
Yeah. You're going to just blow up or hydraulic press a Rare game, just to enrage the community around that game. Maybe it's a Rare copy of Shenmue for the Sega Saturn.
I don't know what game I would do. I really don't.
Well, you have to think about like communities that take themselves too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And Earthbound's pretty high up there.
Exactly. I'm, it's hard for me to think of one that would be even higher than that. I mean, maybe an original copy of Final Fantasy VII.
It'd have to be sealed or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the other one. It's like, you know, a sealed, like, Super Mario Brothers, like one of these, you know, graded games. Something like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Would be kind of fun, although you'd actually be jacking up the price of it even more when you do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought Earthbound was okay. I played it quite a while ago. It's not, I would not call it one of the top 5 RPGs on the Super Nintendo.
I think what you're trying to say is it's not the band you don't like, it's the fans.
Yeah. I think that's right.
They just kind of went a little overboard.
I think so. I think people like Earthbound too much. That's the problem. If someone can like give me an argument for why Earthbound is like better than Chrono Trigger or Final Fantasy 3-6 or Super Mario RPG or even Shadowrun on the NES, Super Nintendo, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you can give me a convincing argument, maybe I will change my mind. And on the flip side, like, there's a lot of game series I'm a big fan of. If you took, like, a game that I really, like, wanted to collect and was hard to find and put it in a hydraulic press, I really wouldn't be upset by it.
Yeah, yeah.
Paprium. Paprium, yes, good old Paprium. He was not surprised to hear Rob was unaware of Paprium by Watermelon Games. It was announced in 2012 and was labeled Vaporware until its surprise release in 2020. It's a decent beat-em-up, but the price limited because, but the price skyrocketed because there's a very limited number of carts out there. He does have a copy for the Genesis. And there was some financial drama with the game that, with the company that contributed to the problem. Yeah, I remember Watermelon Games did, what else did they do? Pure Solar maybe was theirs. I don't know exactly what happened with them.
Yeah, this is totally out of my universe here. I don't know. I haven't followed them at all.
Yeah. So, what do they have? Yeah, Pure Solar is the other one that they have. I think those are the two that they... In Pure Solar, they did not... Did they write that? Or did, was that a game they licensed? And, oh, whatever, I don't remember the history here. also, last confirmations, if you enjoy Psychonauts, he said, I hope you enjoy Psychonauts. He always found it to be fun and interesting. He got a loose copy from GameStop when they were dumping PS2 discs for $1.
It's definitely worth more than that now, but you kind of want the remaster version of this. There's a few quality of life things in there.
All right. And Zach asked people some stuff on social media. We got some feedback, probably unprompted, about Final Doom. Basically asking if there's any difference between Doom and Final Doom. I assume they're referring to the engine. Said he beat the PlayStation version of Doom on his Android, and it was the first time he played Doom without using God mode. He said that Final Doom feels more like an expansion pack because it doesn't add anything new. Yes, I think that's accurate. Zach also asked people about their New Year's resolutions. We got finished Final Fantasy 2 through 5, Dragon Quest 2, not buy any new games. That's an interesting but difficult one. And someone's New Year's resolution is 640 by 480.
That is pretty funny. It actually took me a minute.
And... something about playing Amiga or Amiga ST in your browser.
We had a story a few episodes ago. Yeah.
Oh, a couple episodes ago?
I think so. Or last episode. I don't know. It's been so long. But yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you can play. There's a site where you could go to and play Atari ST or Amiga right in your browser.
All right. I've done the Apple II version. I probably said that when we covered this news article, and I just, since I forgot about it.
We're like fish where we just swim around in a bowl, and by the time we get to the other side, we already forgot.
Forgot why I was swimming in the first place, yeah. What did we talk about? All right, so again, if people want to write in, what do they do?
They email us at email@retrogameclub.net because email is retro. Zach always posts some questions on social media, so you could hit us up. Yeah, there's a link tree, but... if you want to skip all the other Facebook garbage, you could go right to facebook.retrogameclub.net or Twitter at RGC Podcast. Yeah, welcome to season 4. I think it'll be a pretty good season.
Yeah, yeah. And just bear with us as we kind of tweak the formula a little bit here.
And kind of get back in it. We haven't hit the record button and it feels like a month. We're a little bit groggy on this.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Well, I haven't talked to anyone for like a week. No, that's not true. I've been back virtually at work. We were supposed to go back into the office, and then they said, no, don't come into the office because of this virus thing. So then I went on this, I think I told you by email, like, that's when I'm like, okay, if I'm going to be stuck in like the same room for another year, I'm redoing all the cables. And I spent the last weekend of NFL season with like, football games on in the background, literally just unhooking everything I have and just getting the cables out of sight.
So like some cable management and some throwing out cables and all that stuff.
Yeah. Unhooking stuff, finding cables that were not even attached to anything.
Nice.
So it's my favorite, you know, because it's a silly, weird quality of life thing. But like it, the little annoyances like that will drive you insane slow, you know, over time.
Nice.
And yeah. I don't know what I can do next, but I might do a few more improvements. That's about it, man. So, everybody, thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a good one.